Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino. On this episode, we talk with certified psychic trained medium and ordained minister, Corby Mitlide. She is located in New York and has close to 50 years' experience with spiritual and intuitive counseling, past life retrieval and analysis, mediumship, and spiritual guide conferences. She speaks and counsels at holistic expos, seminars, and workshops throughout the United States and Canada, and she also has one-on-one sessions with clients around the world. Her show is showcased on Robert Schwartz's breakthrough series, Your Soul's Plan, Your Soul's Gift, and Your Soul's Love, highlighting her ability to retrieve clients' past lives in detail. She is a very wise, grounded, and funny person. She had dreams of being an actress, and she's done theater, and she's even done stand-up comedy. Enjoy this interview.
First and foremost, thanks for taking a minute out. Where exactly are you located?
I am located in the northern tip of the Catskill Mountains in New York State.
Okay, wonderful. Yeah, my dad was born in Brooklyn and raised in Long Island, so I have some roots that come from the New York area.
Yeah, this is about, I'd say an hour west of Albany.
Well, you know, I think the one thing that's the proverbial elephant in the room for the world is that we're kind of waking up from this whole COVID pandemic thing, and I'm curious, how did the whole COVID thing affect you and the way that you live your life?
Well, I refer to the timeline from March 2020 as the years of Murder Hornet Bingo and Hold My Beer. I just do. Before that, I was on the road 45 weekends a year, 45,000 miles a year on the car. My nickname was the Travel Channel. But I think the universe gave me a heads up because of a herniated disc in the summer of 19. By March 2020, I had moved my entire business online because couldn't do the load-in anymore, couldn't do the drive. But what I found was it was as good or better than the old method, and people still wanted to know, would they have a life after this? And, of course, yes, we will. But I compare 2019 to 1913. 1913 was the year before World War I, we were never the same again. We will never go back to the way life was in 2019. This is the new paradigm.
It certainly is. And I think it's one of the first times, I know I'm going to be 50 this year in my generation, that there was something heavy that happened. I mean, we always talk about the World War II and one generations and all that, but for these kids now especially, I mean, this is going to be kind of the epicenter of their historical timeline.
Absolutely.
From your standpoint, how did this psychic journey, how did this, like, seeing things that I would consider on the other side of what we typically most of us don't see, how did all of this begin for you?
Oh, well, that is the 30-second elevator speech. When I was 9, I read a book called The Witch Family by Eleanor Estes. Wow, there's magic in the world. I want to go find it. Fast forward to 1973 when I was a senior in high school. I was working part-time at Spencer Gifts, and they had the James Bond 007 tarot deck, and I bought it because we were all hippies then. So for about 20 years, I just read for friends, really going deep dish into the cards, their meaning, and without my knowing it, honing my own intuition about it. All of a sudden, in the early 90s, I could do hands-on healing and talk to dead people with no training. That's when the universe handed me my draft notice and said, hello, you're working for us. So I did it part-time. From the early 90s to 9/11, when I watched the towers burn, I turned to my husband and I said, I need to do this work full time. People need to know there are other answers out there. He said, I believe in you. Go do it.
Why do you think most of us can't get this sensation? And do you think that it's probably good that most of us don't feel that and don't see the other realm that's out there?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it's good or bad. We are all wired like the same track house, same house plan. The way I explain it is we all have 10 fingers. Everybody can play chopsticks if they look at the keys. Some of us love what we sense about music, and so we learn to play scales, and we learn to read music, and we practice. 1 in 50 million is Elton John. So the thing about doing what we do is your ego must be on the shelf, because ego gets in the way of giving truthful answers. I mean, what if all of a sudden you hear that you need to tell your client that you see a stuffed rutabaga riding a planned fire engine and you think, oh my God, they'll think I'm crazy. But if your ego's out of the way and you say that, you find out that that was a toy that their grandmother made them 65 years ago and the grandmother is saying hello. So ego, no gut. You are the tube that comes through. It is not your amazing abilities. You are a tool in service to spirit. Get that through your head. Then it's simply a matter of what you love, because spirit will go rifling through your file cabinet to see what you're good at. Me, theater major at Brown University and acted in New York, so I understand stories and character arcs. Words are my drug of choice, so I can tell good stories. And I was a history freak since I was a little kid in single digits. Put that all together, and that's why tarot and past lives are my specialty. But do not give me a pencil and ask me to do spirit art, because I can't draw a stick figure with a sharp pencil and a lot of prayer. Not in my wheelhouse.
So what was your dream growing up? When you were young, what was it that you really wanted to do with your life?
I wanted to act. And that's why I went to Brown and was a theater major. It's why I did acting in New York. But what I realized is I didn't want to be on stage being told what I should say and where I should move. My thing was being able to share my visions of the world, and this is not metaphysical visions, this is my squint on it, with other people. So one of the things that I love doing are podcasts. I've done somewhere between 300 and 400 in the past several years. I mean, what's not fun? I get to shout my ideas to people all over the world. And I write, and I stand up and lecture. And frankly, I'm funny. I've even done stand-up comedy on You Think a Psychic's Life is Easy, because I take my work seriously, but me not so much. So I'm fulfilling what I really wanted once I dug around it and found out what the root really was.
It sounds like you got the best of both worlds. I mean, you get to do everything realistically that you said that you wanted to do, but you're doing it your way.
That's exactly right. Took me decades to figure that out, but I finally got there.
Doesn't it, though? I mean, if you really want to get to the essence of who you are, doesn't it take a while?
It does, but you really need to look at your life, the examined life, forgive yourself for your stupids, see where you want to go next. For instance, with me, I have had the cancer dance 3 times because I had a Dolly Parton figure. It's what I thought it was worth for decades. All of a sudden in 2004, they said, taking the rack, taking the ovaries, and you're going from a Dolly Parton figure to a fat fire plug with permanent side effects in 3 weeks, suck it up. Well, wow. That's where the examined life comes in. You're looking at something you don't want to happen, but you know you can't avoid. So the first thing is, what can I learn from it? What can I take from it? For me, second is, how can I teach with it? And then the magic word is mixed. Don't stay stuck in your story. I mean, there are women that had colon cancer 16 years ago, and the first thing when they shake your hand is, hi, I'm Mary Sue, and I'm a cancer survivor. But who are you now, Mary Sue? I was the 1973 Betty Crocker Homemaker of Tomorrow for New Jersey. That's the truth. But I don't tell people that's who I am now, because I've gone on over the past half century. That's what you got to learn.
It seems to me, and I'm kind of talking a little bit from my experience and what you're saying here, yeah. The way that you embrace this life is that you do go through these metamorphoses. You go through mm-hmm. this phoenix thing where you have to have different incarnations. And I think that's the hard thing about relationships with people around you. If they see you in this one incarnation, they can't accept the other.
Okay, now incarnation is one of those lovely words. I take it you're talking about this life, not past lives, and reincarnation, right?
Yeah, good. Sorry. Yeah.
No,
I'm
that's
being
okay.
Too colloquial.
No, it's perfect. It's fine. I just want to understand which incarnation we're talking. It is. If things don't change, they die. It's one of the reasons why you can be best buddies with someone in high school, and much as you love them, 50 years later, you have nothing in common with them. Doesn't mean they're bad or you're bad. You just bless them and release them. The marriages that work, truly work, are where both partners continue to grow and bring new interesting things into the marriage, bend toward each other with kindness and listening and support. That's the difference between the people that constantly are looking at divorce or they have serial relationships and the ones that stick together.
We are all kind of influenced by the art. Art's a pretty big part of our existence. When you were growing up, what music, what books did you read that really swayed who you were and kind of influenced you wanting to get into theater and be a performer?
Well, I don't know if they influenced my wanting to be into theater, but the ones that really got me looking deeply into myself, pretty typical of the time. Joni Mitchell, absolutely seminal for me. James Taylor, John Denver. When I really wanted to just get ridiculous, it was Elton John and the Golden Years, 1970 to 1976. Books that I read, I tended to go towards science fiction fantasy. There is the Fiona Barr Tapestry by Guy Gavriel Kay. That was wonderful. The Witch Family by Eleanor Estes, as I said, that was the book when I was 9. Since then, there is a magnificent young adult series that has become one of my absolute favorite dog-eared series, and it's called Young Wizards by Diane Duane. The idea in there is wizardry is not you wave a wand. It's you got to learn the speech. If you want to go to the moon, calculate how much oxygen you're going to need. What are you going to need to counteract the lack of gravity? Boom, boom, boom. It's a gorgeous mix of science and magic. Because really, that's science is magic that works. So anything that would present me with life is not dull. You can make your own decisions. You can be the rebel you want to be. Those are the books that really resonated for me. Those are the musicians that lifted me up.
What about a hero? Who's been a hero for you in your life?
It changes. If you go to presidents, it's John Adams and Theodore Roosevelt. I admired Wayne Dyer. I admired Angelina Jolie for seeing what the world needed and damn the torpedoes. I don't care if I'm an actress. I'm going to go and do things that matter. Heroes don't have to stay static. Heroes are people who are living their life truly, but giving it to other people as well. Currently, I mean, I have been a Trekkie since 1966. You've got people like Anson Mount, who is the new Captain Pike on Star Trek Strange New World, and he stepped right up when he saw the racist comments coming to one of the newest members of the Star Wars family, and he said, "We, the Star Trek family, have your back." He is compassionate. He's pretty humble. He walks his talk, is what I would say. To me, heroes are people that walk their talk, that remember we are here in service with compassion and love. And they have to always remember they're not someone who can say their aura don't stink. Because we are all fallible. We all screw up. But at the end of our lives, have we made a difference in the world, a good one? Then we're heroes.
So you had mentioned, and there was a part in your bio where you talk about, you know, people think that psychics are one of two things. And, you know, the Long Island mediums and all of those kinds of things where there's these vague things that are going out there. So I'm curious, I'm finding a parallelism to this when people deal with theology and, you know, there's been issues with, you know, pastors that are just disingenuous, doing horrible things, and everybody thinks that they walk on water. Is this kind of akin to what you're saying? There's a perception of what's going on, and then there's a reality of what you're actually doing and what really good psychics and mediums do.
Part of it, again, it's the ego thing. People need to, if you will, judge psychics the way you would judge any other professional, and I talk about that. Can you make an appointment with us reasonably? Do we explain to you what we can do for you and tell you what it would charge? Do we respect your privacy? Do we explain that we are able to hand you perhaps a toolbox, but we're not the repairman? And that we are not Madame Hoo-Ha or Swami Swalanda that can wave our wand and change your life. I mean, people ask me for the lottery number so they can win the latest big jackpot. And I look at them and I chuckle and I say, well, me first. And anyway, if your psychic isn't at least driving a Lexus, how do you know they know? So they have wildly unreasonable expectations for what we can do for them. But, you know, that's why I wrote my second book, to teach people what we can do, what we can't, and how to stay safe while you're looking. We're useful, but we're not the be-all and end-all.
You know, the one thing I find interesting about modern culture is that a lot of these reality TV shows that have come out where you're filming all the time, it's destroyed a lot of these families and a lot of these people. And I think sometimes when I see the psychic medium shows and those kinds of things, when they're filming, it almost seems as though the constant rolling of the camera could interfere. Do you see that being the case?
Yes, but you got to realize the Long Island medium is so fake. I'm not saying necessarily that she is, but, you know, the camera pans and she is talking to this woman who's looking at the cantaloupes and Wegmans, and she goes, "Your Aunt Doris, she says you have a ball tire in the back of your car, and you're going to die in 2 weeks if you don't get it fixed." Just telling you, and walks away. No, that's what I call a drive-by psychic shooting, and no, that is not how it happens. I mean, reality show is an oxymoron like jumbo shrimp. Number one, her PR people went and looked at all the Wegmans on Long Island and chose one. Then they interviewed a whole bunch of people and said, "Would you like to be on the Long Island medium?" And had them sign model releases, etc., because that's what the lawyers want. And then they rehearsed it 6 times. So reality shows aren't. They are all scripted, no matter what you think. There was a reality show I came within a breath of getting. And they said, "And we'll tell everyone, you're so amazing, you can do..." And I said, "No, you can't do that. I have always told people they can do what I do. All they have to do is want it, learn it. We're all wired the same way. You can't say that." And they said, "Oh, well, then we don't want you." And they went and found somebody else who would let them shill them as nobody can do what this person can do, and they're so special. That's how we get hero worship. That's how people get fooled. I'm sorry, but there are 8 billion people in the world, and there are a lot of people who have psychic ability who don't even know it, but they have it. Not one of us is so special that our aura don't stink, as I say.
What is it that you like the best about what you do? What is it that you look forward to every day doing your line of work?
I get to help people avoid all the stupid things that I did, because I've had a very stupid life. I get them to see what they're capable of. I give them tools. I say, "Here are your opportunities and how to grab them. Here's the tough stuff. Here's how to get through it or a rabbit. Here's your toolbox. Go rock and roll." I also have consultations. It's like, don't ever go to a psychic and say, "What's my purpose? I haven't lived your life. I haven't faced your challenges. I don't know what you adore." So I work with them in what I call a sentence of passion consultation, where they discover what their own rallying cry is. And it's not the job, it's their vapor trail. Mine is cross the bridge from fear to fearlessness and fly. When I can take somebody from point A to point B when they thought they couldn't make it, I'm living my bliss. But I've done it as an actress, an author, an inspirational speaker, a video producer, a legal assistant, a writer for the graphic novel series ElfQuest, and an executive recruiter. It's not the job. And when people realize they have their own answers and they can make their own changes, that gives them their wings and they can fly. I don't want somebody coming back to me every 3 months because without Corby, I can't function. I am not interested in that. I'm a mentor. I am not a guru.
Let's say we talk in you know, 5 years from now. What would you be happy to tell me happened first and foremost in our conversation? What are you looking forward to as time marches forward now?
Being alive when you're 67 every year is not a given. I am hoping that America understands the paradigm shift it needs to go through. I mean, look, I don't care who you've got in Congress and the White House. We are going to go through a dark night of the soul because America is so wildly divided. But sometimes things need to collapse in order for something new to be built. There's a particular card in the tarot called the Tower. And it shows this big tarot, and you know, lightning is striking it, and it's on fire, and people are falling off. So everybody assumes it's doom, gloom, and destruction. I said, no. I want you to think of it as the imploding sports stadium. Boston Red Sox want to build a new stadium. They got to blow up Fenway first, clear the ground, and then rebuild. And that may be where America is. I only hope that I can be of some use. I can light a couple of candles to help people in the dark. I can remind people of what they are capable of. I can see that people are fed. I can see that people are healed. That's my job, as well as to read the cards.
So what would you ultimately, at the end of the day, at the end of your journey, what would you like your legacy to be? How would you like to be remembered?
I would like people to remember that I was able to give them answers for themselves and tools and enlightenment, but I made them laugh while I did it.
If you were to run into somebody that was younger in their teenage years and they've had this ability in their lives to see things that other people don't see, and they're curious about how they should live their lives, maybe they have a dream of getting into theater, but they also have this gift, and they want to know from somebody that's lived a life of theater and that is living this life of seeing things on the other side, what direction, what advice would you give them?
Number one, if they've got these abilities, even if they don't choose to use them professionally the way I do, I would want them to learn the basics. I would probably recommend to them a book called Opening the Channel by Sanaya Roman and Dwayne Packer, which is how I learned 30-some years ago. But the thing that I have to remember, the world is very different than it was for me. I can be an elder. I mustn't be a boomer. Now what's the difference? Boomers, and I'm chronologically there, always remember how much better we had it. Our music was better. Our cars were better. We were better. God, these kids are so lazy. Why aren't they doing blah, blah, blah? That doesn't help millennials and Gen Zs. Because face it, we never had to worry where we're going to come home from school alive. We never worried about the fact that a disease could knock us down. And, you know, we're perfectly healthy one day, and then the 2 days away, we're done. We didn't have to worry about our neighbors coming after us with guns because we believed in science and they didn't. We voted blue and they voted red, or. We never worried about the fact that the world could be uninhabitable in our lifetime, or that maybe we would never own a house or never be able to take care of ourselves because the disparity between the haves and the have-nots is such a chasm. That's why you need to be an elder. An elder realizes you have to get off the stage now. You let them have the light. You answer their questions if they ask you, but you don't tell them, I know better than you do. We have to be content being what I call a third trencher. Third trench in World War I is where the supplies were and the medical was and the food prep was. We don't have to plan the homeless marches or the food drives now. We have to wash the dishes and pack the bags. We have to give the millennials and the Gen Zs the chance to shape the world the way they see it, because we will be dead and it will still be their world. Not quite the answer you may have been expecting, but that's the truth.
No, I like it. I think that's totally accurate. I think it's all about giving the next generation the confidence and the wheelhouse to do it. I know, living through this pandemic with, I have a special needs 17-year-old son, and my stepdaughter, who's 16, I mentioned, has, you know, psychic abilities, and she's very driven. You know, I often talk to my wife about the fact that they're looking to us to get through this, and we have to be the ones still with them, not only the confidence, but some level of optimism and realism, and that's going to fuel who they are, and of course, that'll be a torch that will lead on for the rest of their lives, you know?
Yes.
And that's what we do. Let's say you have a dream tonight. At your present state and age and wisdom and where you're at, you run into a little girl that's you, and she doesn't know that that's who you are and who you've become. And she goes up to you and says, who are you? Who are you? What are you going to tell her?
I'm your potential, but I'm not going to tell you what to do or not do, because everything that you will go through in your life made me who I am, and I love who I am. So you're my treasure.
Now, you had mentioned you did have cancer, correct?
Cancer death 3 times, yes.
Okay. So, you know, it one of the things that I've done a lot over the years is talk to musicians, and there's been some that have had cancer, and the it's interesting to see what their outlook on life is after that. What has that done for you to go through a process like that and see the other side? How has that changed you, and what have you done differently?
Well, I know why I got the cancer. And that's part of my WikiLoo. That's, I came in and what this soul wanted to learn in this particular incarnation was the value of women, that we're more than what we look like, and we are not for use. We are full human beings. That was difficult because I literally was, you know, by age 11, I was a Dolly Parton figure, and I was used to guys never looking above the neck or below the waist. And I thought sex and looks and all of that was all I was worth. Well, I got breast cancer in 1989, four lumpectomies and radiation when I was acting in New York, then skin cancer from the radiation in 2000. But my mind was still in the that's all I'm worth place. And so in 2004, 18 months after I married the right guy, I got a second primary. Took the danger clock back to zero. But they said, you know, going to take the rack, going to take the ovaries, we're ruining you in 3 weeks, suck it up. Well, did I go home and cry? Yes. But then I said there have to be three reasons that I can get okay with this, and I didn't care how stupid they were. So you don't have them, you can't get cancer there. The top half was not going to get slammed in the refrigerator door at the doctor's every year, and every woman listening knows what I'm talking about. And implants, cool, I'll look perky till I'm 93. What it did is it took me away from the body that was all I thought it was worth and made me completely look at my life, what I did with it, how I lived with it, who did I want to be when the body wasn't who I was going to be anymore. And being forced to reevaluate every single thing about myself, I came to the conclusion that I didn't have to be or own all of the stupid things that I had done in the decades previous. It didn't mean I could pretend they didn't happen. They did. But I could stop using them as a personal measuring stick and stop playing them over and over again in my head. So in the 20 years since that last bout, there are a lot of good memories. It hasn't been easy, and there have still been ups and downs. But it means I want to use whatever time is left to me to make more good memories, to use the hellfires I went through to cause my compassion for others more deeply into my psyche so I can be a better teacher and counselor. It was literally the complete paradigm shift that my soul needed me to make so that I could do the work down here I was sent to do. That's how I see it.
What's been the best fan letter response that you've ever gotten? Something that really stands out, maybe that's surprising, that really moved you?
Well, it was one that I got recently from someone I had worked with. And if I can read it, you are a soul doctor or even surgeon whose navigating of cosmic waters is done with precision, care, and grace. Now, you know, I wouldn't use those words about me, but that's what the client said. And so I must be doing something right. But more important than the words of the fan letters is when I see that people have taken what we've talked about and used it to change their lives. That's more important, because remember, fan letters are about ego. It is not about ego with me. It is, have I done something that has helped you? That's all I want.
Corbett, hey, thank you for opening up. This has been wonderful. Before we leave, I want to make sure that we get to the good business of, if anyone out there wants to know more about you, your books, anything that you do on the road, anything related to your world, where can they go and how can they get more?
Oh, my friend, they can't avoid me. They really can't. First place to send them is my website, which is corbymitlai.com. It's brand new top to bottom as of yesterday. So everything is on there, how to get readings with me, where the books are, where I'm going to be, podcasts, things like that. Then you go to Patreon. You go to my YouTube. You go to medium.com for blogs. You go to Pinterest and Instagram, and they're all there under Corby Mitlai.
Beautiful. Corby, thank you again. I appreciate it. Good luck with everything as we move forward.
Thank you, my friend. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Famous Interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, music, and spirituality around the globe. Most music on these episodes comes from Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino on the iTunes Store. You can see all these on the Neon Jazz YouTube channel. And for everything Joe Domino, go to JoeDomino.com, and there you can contribute to the cause via PayPal or Patreon. Until next time.